Now to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling centered on a rather unusual convergence of facts. Chief Justice John Roberts called it an act of revenge born of romantic jealousy. The federal government called it a violation of the Chemical Weapons Treaty. Conservative activists thought they saw a chance to limit the power to make and enforce treaties. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg tells us how it all came out.
The Chemical Weapons Treaty, signed in 1993 and adopted by the United States and 189 other nations, bars the development, use, and storage of chemical weapons. After the Senate ratified the treaty by more than the two-thirds vote required by the Constitution, it passed an enforcement statute, making it illegal to, among other things, possess or use toxic chemicals for any purpose not authorized by law. Enter Carol Ann Bond, a Pennsylvania microbiologist who learned in 2006 that her best friend, Merlinda Haynes, was having an affair with Bond's husband and was pregnant. Bent on revenge, Bond obtained chemicals from her workplace and online and spread them repeatedly on Haynes' car, doorknob, and mailbox. An outraged Haynes complained to local police to no avail, apparently because the chemicals could be easily seen and she suffered no serious harm. Eventually, prosecutors in the Bush administration stepped in. Bond was charged with violating the Chemical Weapons Treaty, pled guilty, and was sentenced to 6 years in prison. Her case, however, caught the attention of conservative lawyers and made two trips to the Supreme Court. On this second trip, the justices faced the question of what, if any, limits there are to the Constitution's treaty power, and whether to reverse a century-old ruling written by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes that said, in essence, that if a treaty is constitutional, so too are the laws enacted to enforce it. Bond argued that hers was a simple assault case, the classic constitutional domain of the states, not the federal government. But the federal government countered that, were she to succeed, it would be the first time in 225 years that any limits had been placed on the treaty power jointly held by the President and Congress. Today, however, the Supreme Court sidestepped the treaty question, to the great relief of foreign policy experts who've served in administrations both Democratic and Republican. John Bellinger served as legal advisor to the National Security Council and the State Department in the George W. Bush administration.
What some had invited the court to do in this situation was to use a sledgehammer to kill a fly and to clip the entire treaty power simply to reverse Ms. Bond's conviction.
In deciding not to take that course, he said, the court acted prudently. The vote to reverse Bond's conviction was unanimous, but the reasoning was not. Six justices read the treaty enforcement statute as not applying to cases like Bond's, while three would have addressed the treaty question and limited the treaty power in some way. Writing for the six, Chief Justice John Roberts said Congress, in writing the statute, did not give any clear indication that it intended to cover purely local crimes like Bond's. This was not a chemical weapon meant to cause serious harm to many, he said. Rather, it was an act of revenge born of romantic jealousy meant to cause discomfort, an act that, in fact, caused nothing more than a minor thumb burn. The government, he said, cannot, without explicitly saying so, transform the definition of a chemical weapon into a term so broad that it encompasses every chemical from detergents under the sink to stain removers. Roberts noted that with the exception of this unusual case, the federal government has not itself used the Chemical Weapons Treaty Enforcement Law to prosecute purely local crimes. Indeed, he noted, only a handful of cases have been brought under this section of the law, and most of those involved either terrorist plots or possession of extremely dangerous substances with the potential to cause severe harm to many people. These are the kinds of crimes, he pointed out, that have not traditionally been left to the states. And he emphasized nothing in today's opinion will disrupt the government's authority to prosecute such offenses. Joining Roberts' opinion were the court's four more liberal justices, plus Justice Anthony Kennedy. The court's three most conservative justices, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito, would have reached the constitutional question and would have imposed some limits on the treaty or enforcement power. While Alito and Thomas predicted the issue would raise its head again soon, many doubted that. Nicholas Quinn Rosencrantz, who filed a brief urging the court to impose new limits, was skeptical.
It's hard to imagine quite the set of facts that will raise this again.
And John Bellinger noted that while 163 treaties were enacted into law during the last Bush administration, these days most pending treaties are going nowhere in the Senate. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.